KOMO Seattle.
KOMO FM Oakville.
20 minutes of nonstop news starts now.
Straight ahead on KOMO.
Tenant protections once again take center stage at the state capitol. I'm Bill O'Neill. I'll have more.
Slowing down the steady rate of rent increases. I'm Corwin Hake. New law promises early warning.
First live to ABC News. KOMO News Time, 2 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Scott Goldberg. As questions continue to swirl around the safety of Boeing's 737 MAX jets, the U.S. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao is asking the Inspector General for a formal audit on how the plane that crashed in Ethiopia was certified safe. Boeing says it will fully cooperate. More from ABC's David Curley.
I am told that investigators from the NTSB are going to Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, where the Ethiopians have taken the data from the two black boxes. That means that the analysis from the Ethiopian crash is starting. And while French investigators have told us there are similarities between the two crashes, it's that data will tell us, was there actually something the same that happened? And was it what's called MCAS, which is an anti-stall system, which is new to the MAX?
The planes remain grounded following two crashes in less than 4 months. At the White House, President Trump has announced he's nominating Steve Dixon, a former Delta pilot, to serve as the FAA administrator. Freshman Republican Congressman Mark Green says he'll introduce a constitutional amendment on Thursday restricting the number of Supreme Court seats to 9. It's a response to talk by some Democratic presidential candidates to increase the number of seats to counteract President Trump's recent nominations. It isn't easy to change the Constitution. It's only been done 27 times, and that hasn't happened since 1992. Newly opened search warrants show President Trump's former fixer and personal attorney was among the special counsel's earliest targets in the Russia investigation. The documents reveal Michael Cohen was in Robert Mueller's crosshairs nearly a year before the FBI raid on Cohen's home and office.
Almost 20 pages worth of filings that would support the underlying campaign finance case, the hush payments to women, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, that Cohen pleaded guilty to and implicated the president in. All that that's redacted, and that's an indication that that investigation is ongoing.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. On Wall Street, the Dow finished down 27 points. You're listening to ABC News.
Stay connected. Stay informed. KOMO Midday.
Good afternoon. KOMO News Time 202. I'm Taylor Van Sice. Now the top stories from the KOMO 24/7 News Center. A Seattle police officer is recovering after being stabbed by a blind man. The officer was responding to a disturbance in the Central District late last night after the man reportedly wrapped raw meat around a neighbor's door handle, urinated outside their door, and then smeared toothpaste on the peephole. When officers arrived, the suspect came out of his apartment swinging a tactical knife, cutting the officer in the face and arm. The officer is recovering and the suspect has been arrested. 20 days is not enough warning that your rent is about to go up, according to supporters of a bill that calls for 2 months' notice. KOMO's Corwin Hake explains.
In a booming economy, rents can rise at a bewildering speed, especially considering the current law that says landlords need give only 20 days' notice before a rent hike takes effect. State Representative June Robinson says that short window is disruptive, and she wants to see the notice period tripled.
60 days notice will allow households to plan for the increased expense and will give them more time to consider whether or not they have to move.
Perhaps most affected by the short notice are low-income and fixed-income tenants.
They're finding themselves not only getting rent increases as their lease turns over at the end of a year, but mid-lease rent increases as well to the tune of several hundred dollars.
The law would do nothing to stop rent hikes, but sponsors say it would at least slow them down. Corwin Hake, KOMO News.
Keeping people in their homes, the goal described in a tenant protections bill, back in the spotlight at the state capitol. Here's KOMO's Bill O'Neill.
The biggest change that would come with Senator Patty Cooterer's bill would be in expanding the notice from 3 to 14 days for renters who can't make their payments.
Tenants were able to make up the shortfall with a second paycheck. They were able to avoid the eviction process completely. The landlord was paid. There was no loss of housing inventory. In other words, landlords weren't leaving the marketplace.
Cooterer's bill would also streamline the notice process for landlords, but testifying before the House Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee, landlord John Gibson says he doesn't see a lot of fixes in the bill.
The 3-day notice is only the first step in the eviction process, and I hope you all realize that.
Bill O'Neill, KOMO News.
Coming up on KOMO.
Can the state regulate greenhouse gas emissions from non-emitters? I'm Ryan Harris with the state Supreme Court case.
I'm Carlene Johnson. Plenty of opposition to state lawmakers' efforts to levy new taxes on companies that distribute painkillers in our state.
Now our AAA traffic update. Here's Marina Rockinger.
Southbound I-5 is rolling slow from Lake City away into downtown Seattle. Southbound 405, some crowding from Southeast 8th to Coal Creek Parkway. And so far, just some minor slowdown southbound I-5 approaching the Port of Tacoma Road. This is good traffic brought to you by Tulalip Resort and Casino. Discover the unrivaled gaming power of one, the only gaming card you need. Find all the details at TulalipResortCasino.com. Your next Como traffic at 2:14.
The Como forecast now with Seth Wayne.
Still going for a lot of sunshine through the day today and high temperatures well into the 70s. Going for another warm one tomorrow. So records not only yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Going for a cooler one with the chance of some scattered showers coming back at us for the weekend. I'm Seth Wayne in the Como Weather Center.
And yes, it is indeed a record breaker here in Seattle. 77 degrees at Como News. Como News time 2:05. A question of authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions outside the sources of actual emissions is at the heart of a case in the state Supreme Court today. Como's Ryan Harris with the arguments from both sides.
The case brought by the Association of Washington Businesses over whether the Department of Ecology can regulate fuel sellers because their products cause emissions even though the sellers aren't the emission source. The association's lawyer, Jason Morgan, says ecology has always targeted the source.
They said, for example, boilers. Here's a set of regulations for boilers. Here's a set of regulations for incinerators. It's always on the people who are releasing the emission into the ambient air.
Laura Watson, attorney for the Department of Ecology, argues
most pollutants are effectively regulated at the smokestack or at the tailpipe. Greenhouse gases pose a unique problem because of their ubiquity and the fact that they are released every time fossil fuels are burned.
Watson also told the justices that lawmakers have twice said ecology has existing authority and that the governor has directed them to craft regulations based on that authority. Ryan Harris, Como News.
And the court has not yet ruled. A victory for the Yakima Nation at the U.S. Supreme Court. It's ruled the tribe does not have to pay a state fuel tax. Justice Neil Gorsuch says an 1855 treaty makes a handful of modest promises to the Yakima Nation, including the right to move goods to market freely. But President Trump's other Supreme Court appointee, Brett Kavanaugh, dissented, arguing that the treaty merely gives tribal members the same right to travel as everyone else. Construction continues at SeaTac Airport, where a new international terminal is expected to open next year. The central Puget Sound region is expected to continue growing, though not quite as fast as it has been. Eric Fitch with SeaTac provided an update to members of the State Transportation Commission.
The growth of Washington transplants is actually slowing, but we have been the fastest growing city in the nation in the last decade. King County's population is growing faster than the country's, and at SeaTac for us, that means that we're experiencing an increase of nearly a million annual passengers a year.
SeaTac served nearly 50 million passengers in 2018, more than 432 metric tons of air cargo moved through. A 33-year-old man is sentenced to 5 years in prison for a racist attack on a black man at a Longview bar. We get details from Como's Eric Heintz.
Jeremy Campbell was sentenced earlier this month to 5 years in prison after he pleaded guilty in February to malicious harassment and to having methamphetamine with the intent to deliver. Campbell was arrested in October for beating the man and using a racial slur. He also was initially charged with assault, but that charge was dismissed as part of his plea deal. In his guilty plea, Campbell wrote that he intentionally punched the man in the face and that the man was knocked unconscious. Eric Heintz, Como News.
It's been almost a year since the Hart family from Clark County died after their SUV drove off a cliff in California, and now a jury will determine if it was an accident or a crime. Jennifer Hart, along with her partner Sarah and five of their six adopted children, were found dead March 26, 2018. One child is still missing. Earlier that month, a neighbor called CPS with concerns the children were being abused. Later, the Hart's SUV was found at the bottom of a cliff. Investigators found Jennifer Hart had been drunk at the time of the crash. Companies in Washington that warehouse and resell prescription drugs, including narcotics, have gotten a big tax break for the last two decades. But as Como's Carlene Johnson reports, there's a bill to end that business and occupation tax benefit.
Another bill that looks less likely to pass to levy a 37% tax on gross sales income derived from the business of reselling and warehousing prescription opioids, same as they do for marijuana. There is a lot of opposition to that, including from the Pharmacy Association, the Grocery Association, Association and the Hospital Association all arguing it's the patient who will end up paying more. Chris Bandoli from the Washington Hospital Association.
Especially concerned this could fall most heavily on facilities that provide care for those who very much need pain management treatment, such as cancer, surgical services, and hospice and palliative care.
Last week, State AG Bob Ferguson filed a lawsuit alleging that between 2006 and 2014, three lead distributors, according to the Seattle Times, failed to report at least 269,000 suspicious orders. They're legally obligated to halt those suspicious shipments and report them to the DEA. Carlene Johnson, Como News.
A Thurston County Sheriff's deputy who suffered two strokes this month is now awake from a coma. Deputy Troy Larson had his first stroke March 6th while in his patrol car as he was doing paperwork, and after several days at Harborview, he suffered another one. He had surgery on Friday, and that left him in a coma, but Sunday he was able to come out of it. He's still in the ICU. Coming up after sports.
Helping the younger generation separate fact from fiction. I'm Brian Calvert with the unique program being hosted by the UW.
Sports at 10 and 40 past the hour here on your home of the Huskies. More on their academic proceedings momentarily. But first, sports in general with Tom Glasgow at the Harley Exterior Sports Desk.
Well, we are about half a day away from the start of the 2019 Major League Baseball season with the Mariners and A's playing the first of a two-game series in Tokyo at the Tokyo Dome. Lefty Marco Gonzalez on the mound for the Mariners. Ichiro in the starting lineup for the Mariners in what could be his second-to-last game as a professional ball player. How about this reported deal that's being worked on between the Angels and Mike Trout? 12 years, $432 million. That would shatter the record for the largest deal in North American sports history. From the NFL, former Seahawks, Falcons, Raiders defensive end slash outside linebacker Bruce Irvin signing a one-year deal with the Carolina Panthers. March Madness tipping off not too long from now as the This afternoon, you have your first two of the first four matchups. Big dance activity in Dayton, Ohio. The first game up, Fairleigh Dickinson against Prairie View. The winner of that one will take on Gonzaga on Thursday in Salt Lake City. The other game today has Temple taking on Belmont. More sports in 30 minutes on your home of the Huskies, Como News. I'm Tom Glasgow.
Como News, time 2:11. The University of Washington is hosting an all-day event aimed at testing your critical thinking skills. Como's Brian Calvert has more about the event and the high school students invited to take part.
You've heard of iTunes. Assistant Professor Javin West is part of something called iSchool.
A new kind of school on campuses where we bring together people from computer science and social science and philosophy and law, and you know, I'm even from biology. So you get this really interdisciplinary environment to try to solve big problems that sort of deal at the work on problems at the interface of humans and technology.
Now that's key to keep in mind when it comes to West's popular class and the event that it spawned. They're holding something called Miss Info Day, an event aimed at high school kids and their ability to filter fact from fiction.
So this idea sprouted as another leaf in our sort of calling BS project that started here at the University of Washington with my colleague Carl Bergstrom, who's another professor on campus, with the aim of, you know, teaching students and the public and even ourselves how to identify misinformation and disinformation online.
Apparently, the youngest among us have just as much trouble identifying fake news as the rest of us.
They understand the ecosystem better of social media, but they, as well as everyone else, can fall prey to arguments that sound too good to be true, or you know, forget to corroborate a claim that they hear.
One thing Professor West says he hopes we all walk away with:
you should question your source, but also question your own sort of biases. You know, we have this tendency to believe things that sort of fit our own narrative, and you know, forcing ourselves, especially in this really politically divided environment, it's important that all of us on whatever side of the political spectrum are, to sort of think about the biases we have and then try to, you know, have a little bit more open mind when we look at news.
Just remember, it's not easy spotting something that's not true, so don't feel badly if you get duped. There are a lot of people from all walks of life out there misleading us, sometimes by accident, most times not an accident at all.
I still have hope that we're going to work through this, and truth does exist. We just need to work a little harder to find it.
Brian Calvert, Como News.
Colorado's Democratic governor has signed a controversial bill that would give the state's 9 electoral college votes to the winner of the national popular vote in presidential elections. Governor Jared Polis is quietly signing the measure into law, some prominent Democrats pushing to end the constitutional mandate after George W. Bush and Donald Trump both lost the popular vote but won the electoral college. Come on, News Time 2:14. Now our AAA traffic. Here's Marina.
In the Lacey area on westbound Highway 510 at I-5, the left turn lane is blocked with a collision that's affecting both directions of 510 because eastbound is affected too. So both eastbound and westbound right at I-5. We do have some slow traffic. Southbound 167 now starting to form. It looks like right around Ellingson or so, southbound I-5. It's going to be somewhat bunched up from just south of Lake City Way towards Mercer. Southbound 405 crowded in Bellevue from southeast 8th off and on to 112th. This look at traffic is brought to you by Tulalip Resort and Casino. Discover the unrivaled gaming power of One, the only gaming card you need. Find all the details at TulalipResortCasino.com. Your next Como traffic at 2:24.
Our Como forecast, sunny today and through most of the week. It changes by Friday. Probably Friday evening is when you'll see the clouds really start to thicken up and bring us rain by the time Saturday morning gets here. And as far as our high temperatures go, today is not expected to be the warmest day, despite it being 77 degrees in Seattle. Tomorrow, we may very well be in the low 80s. Thursday, back to the mid-60s, low 60s for Friday.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Seattle's only 24-hour news station, Como News.
Bill O'Neill at the editor's desk. I'm Taylor Van Sice. Among the headlines we're following today, it turns out Special Counsel Robert Mueller and the FBI started looking into former Trump attorney Michael Cohen months before his office, home, and hotel room were raided last year. Newly unsealed court documents reveal search warrants and hundreds of pages of records related to the Russia probe. Cohen headed to prison after pleading guilty to lying to Congress, as well as tax fraud, banking fraud, and campaign finance violations. And today, Google unveils a cloud-based video game streaming service. The service is called Stadia, and it allows people to stream games anytime, anywhere, whether it be on a phone, a smart TV, or a computer. This all happening today at the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco. The 2020 presidential election is still attracting candidates for the Democratic nomination, and former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke raised a staggering amount of money in the span of just 24 hours. Washington Post senior political reporter Aaron Blake is following the story. He spoke with Como's Rick Van Sice.
Aaron, O'Rourke brought in a ton of cash for his Senate run back in 2018. What makes him so attractive to political donors?
You're exactly right, and it was actually a record amount for a Senate candidate, both incumbent and challenger. And usually, generally speaking, you see incumbents raise a whole lot of money, but challengers really struggle to. Certainly, he created some momentum behind his candidacy, but I think there was a question in that race about whether people were donating to him because they really liked him, or whether this was the guy who was running against Ted Cruz, who a whole lot of Democrats would like to have seen lose, especially in a state like Texas, which would be really important for Democrats to put in play moving forward. So I think the $6 million he raised, which is about 8% of the total that he raised in that record-setting Senate campaign on his first day, is a sign that the base that he built in that campaign is still excited. It's the highest amount we've seen for any Democratic candidate so far, and it serves notice that he's going to be a contender in this campaign if he can keep it going.
How does O'Rourke's money compare to whether candidates at this juncture?
Well, it narrowly edges out Bernie Sanders, who raised what was also then a staggering $5.9 million in the first day as a candidate. The next person who has actually shared their totals, and by the way, I should emphasize, this is all based upon what the campaigns tell us, since they don't actually have to file reports on this stuff. The third place finisher is $1.5 million. That's Kamala Harris. And then a smattering of other candidates have raised about $1 million in their first couple days as a candidate. So this is a, you know, apart from Bernie Sanders, this is a matter of magnitude more than we're seeing from these other candidates. And I think that's why we can, you know, safely say that this is a sign of real, you know, belief and real momentum in his campaign, at least as far as the base goes.
We're talking with Washington Post senior political reporter Aaron Blake. Aaron, you talk about Sanders, who was very proud of the large number of small donors donations that came in for his presidential campaign in 2016. Do we have any idea yet what sort of donors are active this early in the campaigns?
I said earlier that these numbers are basically self-reported. They're what the campaigns want to put out there. In the case of O'Rourke, we don't know how many donors this relies upon. If you look at his Senate campaign, it certainly did rely upon a lot of small donors. But I would imagine that if his number of small donors was bigger than Sanders's, which I think was in the 200,000s or something like that, we would see that number being put out there. So we don't know exactly how much of this is the really, really small dollar donors and how much is the bigger donors. But given that this is money that was raised online, generally speaking, it is coming from average people. This is not money that came from one giant fundraiser or something like that.
Either way, a lot of money coming in already to the campaign for 2020, at least in the Democratic coffers. And you can read more online at WashingtonPost.com by Aaron Blake.
That's Como's Rick Van Sice. Have you ever given a cop the middle finger? A federal appeals court in Michigan says a police officer violated a woman's constitutional rights by pulling her over after she gave him the middle finger. ABC's Scott Goldberg reports.
In suburban Detroit, an officer pulled over Deborah Cruz Gulyas for speeding, but let her go with a lesser, non-moving violation. As she pulled away, she held out her middle finger. That led to the officer pulling her over a second time and giving her a more serious speeding ticket. Cruz Gulyas then sued, calling the second ticket a violation of her First Amendment right to free speech. Attorney Corey Silverstein says she's right.
He had no probable cause to pull that vehicle over.
A federal appeals court has agreed and is allowing her suit to move forward, saying being rude may violate the golden rule, but isn't illegal or, for that matter, punishable. Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
Still not sure that I would try it. Como News Time 220. Our Propel Insurance Money Update now with Jim Chesko.
Stocks gave up early solid gains and ended the session narrowly mixed as investors sifted through conflicting reports regarding the progress of U.S.-China trade talks. The Dow Jones Industrials fell 26 points. The S&P 500 was essentially flat, while the NASDAQ Composite managed a gain of 9 points. Shares of Revlon slid nearly 7%. The cosmetics maker reported unaudited fourth quarter and 2018 earnings, saying it spotted a material weakness in its internal controls over financial reporting. Oil futures ended slightly lower. April crude eased 6 cents to settle at $59.03 a barrel. That's your money now.
Money news at 20 and 50 past the hour. Marina has our AAA traffic next.
Your official hometown Husky station.
Right wing three, yes!
Como News. Catch all the postseason hoop madness.
Windmill Jim, wow!
One radio, one official hometown Husky station. Como News.